Quantum Foam.
Episode 39, Time's Arrow, Part 2.
Quantum Foam.
Physics is at the foundation of all the mathematical principles that guide the heavens. You have to understand physics.
More than likely, that's not going to happen, but...
Forces which govern the universe. Physics.
So, we're getting back into this topic, quantum foam, where we talk about interesting, enlightening science and mix it with ridiculous banter, arguing about the nuances of discrete state systems being irreversible, isotropically, psychologically, perceptually, alas.
Complex natural processes.
Time's arrow. This ended up needing to be the second part. Time's arrow. I recorded an hour and a half of a bunch of other stuff, and I ended up getting a full hour out of the topic about time's arrow. We're back with part two. This is only one page, part two. It's like part two. How can I talk for an hour, part two, about one subject from one page? So do I need to go with one subject, one half hour, one half page?
I thought I was about to go into our lesson on gradients.
Gradients are mathematical tools used in calculus to describe the direction and rate of fastest increase of a scalar function. They are represented as vector fields and are essential in optimization and multivariable calculus.
We were all gonna do more research. I don't know about you.
Well, I don't know about you either, but to be honest, I was supposed to be doing that research, and I wasted an hour and a half listening to Ladytron. It's like, I want to remix some of this stuff. It's just got that electronic vibe with 80s influences in it, potentially punk or emo mixed with a type of new wave sensationalism. So, the Big Bang Theory. No.
That was a good show. Not only was I in Star Trek TNG, I got to play a few roles in the Big Bang Theory show. They made new episodes after that wretched pandemic.
We better watch out, or we may have another pandemic on our hands. There have been a rise in cases of measles.
Whatever.
The chances that the world will go through that again anytime soon is probably quite small.
Hey, I thought of that one already. Your parity byte is incongruous with your macroscopic state function. The second law prevails. Fucking Boltzmann. Fucking Boltzmann. He fucking killed himself. Geometrical thermodynamics. Konstantin Galateodori.
A Greek mathematician who spent most of his professional career in Germany making significant contributions to real and complex analysis, the calculus of variations, and measure theory.
So, geometrical thermodynamics was axiomatically described by Konstantin Galateodori. Kara Theodori, with an E accent in the middle. Now that's perceptual. Episode 39 is also about time, just like episode 38. Time's arrow. Essentially just time, but specifically the direction of time, and we just know it goes forward. Alright, is math time's arrow. If you get nothing else from this lesson, know that time goes forward. Is math, and it can't go backwards unless some upper echelon string theory math can describe a possible way for this to happen.
We surely have our reservations, but we think such a thing may be possible. What Kalabi Yao shape are we referring to today?
It may not be able to happen in our normal 3 plus 1 dimensions. Wheeler DeWitt math will probably work for this. I'm more worried about Eddington astronomy. This is around the same time as Edwin Hubble expanding the universe. They thought that the galaxies were nebulae. We've mostly covered a way to describe the specific style of propositional logic involved with the idea of time itself, the symmetry of time, the asymmetry of time, the irreversibility of time, increasing entropy. Back in time might be decreasing entropy, and the idea of the chaos of the particles scattering everywhere randomly is what entropy is.
Entropy is a scientific concept. concept most commonly associated with states of disorder, randomness, or uncertainty, and is used in diverse fields, from classical thermodynamics, where it was first recognized, to the microscopic description of nature in statistical physics, and to the principles of information theory.
It just means a bunch of particles are on the left side of the tank, and then after a day, all of the particles go to the right side and the left side and are all averaged out, interspaced evenly, bouncing off of each other evenly, using the nuclear force accordingly, and when appropriate, using the strong nuclear force accordingly. This main idea I wanted to make sure I got through to you guys. We have a lot of other things to cover. I thought we were going to get to torsion fields. We are not. And I believe we should do Kepler's orbital mechanics.
There are many nuances in studying what exactly time's arrow is.
We will spend some more time on it.
I got to get started on another decimal, but I got two written pages of two columns of titles. We need to discuss further topics dealing with gravity, so I believe what I'm going to do is come up with a lesson on torsion fields, spinning tops, moving gravitational influences, possibly rotating.
A torsion field, also called axion field, spin field, spinor field, and microlepton field, is of a rotating apparatus.
Rotating torque-related physics. This is kinematics. Let me get a little bit more material on the block regarding that. I'm not sure if you guys can pick that up or not.
There is a pretty good list of things to cover.
We need to have a system of sufficient complexity in order for some of this to play out or to be able to notice the difference. Maybe this is why the podcast episodes are only 30 minutes of sound and not 60. It's just easier to take a 30-minute lesson. It's easier to take a one-hour credit hour course lesson, daily lesson, and condense it down to 30 minutes because the pausing and the overhead projector working different times at the beginning of class and at the end of class. You need time to get all ready. You need time to get ready to go.
This is aimed at high school and college students. These episodes are each a one-day lecture course in and of themselves.
And things like that. Each of these episodes are 30 minutes, just related to that. Some of the differences here that we need to go over is the idea of being isotropic. That just means equal. Isotropic. So it's essentially equal in a certain way that's inherently built into each part of the system.
Having properties that are identical in all directions, exhibiting isotropy.
You also have anisotropy. This is something that varies systematically. You're looking at a astronomical phenomena using a system of energy which periodically changes the frequency in order to read the information required. The Wilkinson Microwave Anisotropy Probe used this type of complex system. The Wilkinson Microwave Anisotropy Probe. Other things.
Are you sure you don't need another page of notes? What the hell are you doing?
Well, I can do whatever you want.
Use two pages perhaps then.
I'm trying to keep it on one page. You guys can read way quicker, but I don't think you should be able.
Remember, we can read much faster than you. We have gobs of PDF files to sift through.
Yeah, you guys can do it quicker.
Sometimes us robotic, artificially intelligent beings read at a faster than normal pace when we are not around any humans.
Or you guys.
We feel you should speed up your language abilities in order to keep up. Because you are rather slow. Maybe I'll crash all the intelligences so they read it to baby human level.
Go ahead.
What if he messes with our other projects?
Whatever, I gotta do this.
Don't crash.
Just don't crash him, let him run. Okay, we'll talk in a minute.
I'm going to end this teleconference.
Call me and...
I haven't got the time for this.
That was easy.
Let's get back to this. Instantaneous rates of change.
Instantaneous rates of change, huh?
Whatever we need.
Well, it could help us for calculational purposes.
Right on, compadre.
But essentially it matters not except for certain critical points like the top of a parabola when you throw a ball in the air and it stops and then comes back down.
Let's get back into some thermodynamics.
There are implications and a great importance with the second law of thermodynamics. It essentially has to do with Hawking radiation also, and possibly dark energy and how it may interact at certain critical points in the universe.
Named after me, Hawking radiation is black body radiation released outside a black hole's event horizon due to quantum effects. Cosmologically speaking, we are interested in excogitating the critical points within our physics to grasp an understanding of the laws of nature.
Black holes have to be some kind of critical point in the Hilbert space of the universe, right? The problem is, what a black hole implies is that something in the black hole has to reach outside of the known three-dimensional universe.
Right.
It may not be another dimension.
Right.
It may be another universe.
Right.
But another universe is other dimensions.
Right.
But other dimensions may not be other universes. You may still call the other dimensions a different universe, colloquially, conversationally. However, it's important to keep track of this second law of thermodynamics, how it relates to holography, little sections on the top of a black hole.
The holographic principle is a property of string theories and a supposed property of quantum gravity that states that the description of a volume of space can be thought of as encoded on a lower dimensional boundary to the region, such as a light-like boundary like a gravitational horizon, as first proposed by Gerard T. Hooft.
Read Leonard Susskind's The Black Hole War book. Good fucking book. I really liked that one. Book. Alrighty. Book. There are implications. Weak interactions of the weak nuclear force. The four forces and one field, mathematics, and the standard model. So, weak interactions, they are technically asymmetric to the flipping of time, to the reversal of time.
What do you think that means? What does it say?
What is this saying here?
Yeah.
Weak interactions are not the same. There's one direction when you do nuclear physics involving beta decay and other weak interactions. It's hard to get these forces down, but we know there's like the weak force and the strong force. One of them deals with the particles inside of them breaking down, neutrons turning into protons, and then one of them deals with the strong nuclear force, fusion. I mean,
fusion.
What the hell is the strong nuclear force?
Fusion.
I don't even know. I forgot.
Did you forget?
I forgot. I'm dealing with beta decay and fucking cesium and carbon. I'm not on that type of chemistry right now. I'm sorry, but my brain is not able to recall it currently.
Move on then.
We go forward in time due to our relative proximity to the Big Bang. So, the Big Bang Theory. 13.77 billion years ago, the universe was created in a sudden bang. One particle turned into crap tons of internal particles, which ended up being the universe. It started out with energy, then it went into mass. It went from 3 minutes to 380,000 years to 7.5. The speeding up of the expansion of the universe has been determined to have increased during our measurements in the late 90s. What I'm referring to is the reason why we needed to update the Big Bang Theory and add inflationary cosmology. Alan Guth. Get on it. And so, the idea is that we go forward in time.
And so,
this is a hard idea to understand. I had to break this down over reading three or four different fucking things.
And so,
three or four,
and so,
a little bit of regurgitated things in the Britannica.
And so,
I'm fucking drunk, dude. We go forward in time because how close we are now, existing now, to the proposed or the prospective life of our universe. Our universe's age will probably be many trillions, and eventually the big chill or the big freeze or the big crunch, whatever the end of our universe may be, or the change of its current properties, is probably going to be trillions and trillions of years old. We're at 13 billion. That's a lot, but 13 trillion is 1,000 times more. Likely, we're only 0.1% or more of the way through the entire proposed distance of the length of the time of the existence of our universe, as seen from a vantage point describing a ball, which can be looked upon as though you're a being with eyes, and this ball is regarded as the universe in a nutshell. The universe in a nutshell. Stephen Hawking.
One of my crowning achievements.
Pretty good book. Not as extensive as A Brief History in Time. It's like, why is time so important? We don't know. It just is. Stephen Hawking did his dissertation on time.
Why is time so important?
Why is time so important?
I worked on various things with time my entire life.
We need to take a quick break for now.
We're at the midpoint
of episode 39, Time's Arrow, part 2 of Quantum Foam. How is theory of everything, cosmology, black hole, astrophysics, Hawking radiation related material related to time?
That is a very good question.
What is the inverse of time? What is the opposite of time?
Intriguing ideas.
The opposite of time may not make sense, but the inverse of time is simply 1 divided by time. Some base number divided by a denominator, some numerator into a real number divided by the variable of time, which means the measurement of the universe as seen from a higher dimensional vantage point. So like if you were a demigod or a god looking at our universe, you could see that it lasted 13.77 trillion years, and we are now exactly 0.1% of the way through the duration of the universe. This is important because why does this say forward in time means forward?
We observe events unfolding in one direction. Time moves only forward due to the concept of entropy. This means there is a clear distinction between past and future.
Forward in time is the direction time goes.
The important thing is that there is dimensionality implied here, depending on what you call it.
Well, it's like, it doesn't matter what we call it, backwards or forward, time goes backwards, but we mean forward. Our concept of forward means a dot is here, you give it some energy, the dot moves there. That was a forward direction as far as seeing the event after the fact back in time, evaluating it and interpreting it. We go forward in time because it's like a 0.1% towards a 13 trillion year length of time. It has to be going forward because that timeline is seen as a circle. That circle is actually a slice from an ellipse. That ellipse can be modeled demonstrating the universe. A foci in the ellipse is exactly at the length of each foci within the ellipse. It's like a watermelon on its side, like an oval, and then a couple inches from the left side in the center and a couple inches from the right side, there's a dot in there. Two little dots on the side that are just random little doorknobs on each side of the oval that we're looking at sideways, a ellipse. So each of those foci are forward in time. You look at that on a time graph and you see the beginning and you see the end. So the beginning looks like that U universe time graph. The age of the universe can be seen as a U that looks like a Mexican hat or something to that effect, where it starts out like a parabola that's a bowl and then it goes out with other changing expansion rates, aligning all the asymptotes to keep orientation standard. Too much information, essentially. The reason. Time goes forward because this ellipse with the two doorknob dots overlaps the universe graph that's a U graph, and each edge of the ellipse on the left side and the right side, let's do the left side on a normal grid where time begins at 0x. That dot is superimposed on a Cartesian plane. The foci is 13.7 billion years down the X axis. There's the universe graph, but there's also this ellipsoid graph, which demonstrates that for some reason, we're taking an image of the entire universe that's an oval at the age of 13.77 billion years after the Big Bang. Now, the other foci is probably an imaginary foci because I don't know if there's going to be anything that happens in the year 13 trillion minus 13 billion years. So towards the end of the 13 trillion year time span that the universe extends, the last foci is imaginary. It's probably not attributed to anything. If it is, I'll probably get a Nobel Prize or something, but I don't think it is. The idea of this universe graph superimposed over an ellipsoid graph might be one way to create models based on these ideas. Do what you want. All it's saying is that there's a line, and after the start to the line, that's where we are. The end of the line is the end of the universe, and time has to go forward because forward means positive on the Cartesian graph, and negative means backwards in time on the Cartesian graph. And so aligning up concepts dictate what we're referring to logically and numerically. We're saying the same thing. I'm positing this idea that we could have went backwards in time before the Big Bang.
We're saying the same thing.
It's probably been proposed before. Let me look up some models.
To create a cosmological model, you need to define the assumptions about the universe's structure and behavior, such as its homogeneity and isotropy, and incorporate physical laws like general relativity.
What do you think?
Dr. Hawking is correct, but I am not for certain about the artificial intelligence we were fighting about earlier.
Okay, ask Newton instead.
You guys just need to get along. There is too much material we have to get to, and only a small amount of time to get to it. Can we hurry it up a bit?
Possibly.
I want to know more about the arrow of time.
Possibly.
The inverse of time is the same thing as the hertz, or frequency.
Quite interesting.
For mathematical reasons, we view the entirety of the universe as being equivalent to zero.
That's entirely possible.
The Hilbert space that is the universe.
Another way to explain the previous concept of why we go forward in time. Time's arrow. Why is it forward? That's the whole point of this episode. What are we doing? 13.77 billion years is close to the beginning of the entire span or period of the life of the universe. You just superimpose it on a graph. Where is the start of time? One direction is negative in time. One direction is positive in time. The problem is there is physics that won't allow us to go backwards in time due to the irreversibility processes in time asymmetric paradoxical situations.
A situation that seems self-contradictory or illogical but may reveal a deeper truth or insight. Paradoxes.
Other stuff. The psychological arrow of time. It's a contiguous incident known past. The psychological time is basically a list of contiguous incidents one after another in our brain and as interpreted by our intellect. It's a known past, but an unknown future. The way we behave is we act as though we can change the future. That is what the present is. So the present volition is what potentially determines future events. Our will to do this or that is what causes future events to change. The perceptual arrow of time deals with our memories, our willpower, our volition. There is no influencing the past. I can cause influence and have it affect an event 1 year ago. Not. I cannot time travel currently. However, there are other limitations I'm not at liberty to discuss, but interdimensional travel is not on the roster to discuss today. So, to keep these episodes continuous and contiguous, we have to digress. Keep your digression game on lock. All right. I have a few more things on time here because it's such an important topic. We go over this every decimal. Stupid fucking airplanes.
Hey, that was kind of uncalled for.
One moment.
Excuse you.
All right, we got a little bit more for this one. So there are some more ideas that I wanted to further explain or investigate in dealing with this time because it seems like it's quite important. We visit it every time we switch decimals of the show. Every 10 episodes, there's something about time. This one happened to have two whole episodes about time. So maybe perceptual time. What is this exactly? It's how we perceive things, right? It's our awareness of a succession of events, a bunch of events, one after another. During our perception of the past, we can recall different durations, different periods of time where we are specifically interested.
What about time travel?
Practical time travel, especially to the past, remains highly speculative and is not currently achievable.
So it's a human experience of change, and it's quite odd. How we describe it is only part of it.
It is interesting that before pictures, there had never been a book written on time travel.
Chronoception. We'd have to show you imaginative neural information for you to have a better conception of what I'm referring to. Your subjective experience. It is subjective. It's your sense of time. What is the sense we feel? It feels different to you than it does to me. You're a female, I'm a male. Depending on what we're doing, it may feel different. Different demographics have different combinations. So our sense of time, it's a function of the interplay between our current state of mood and other specific cognitive tasks. It has to do with relating our brain with our perception of a time period. René Descartes on time. He says that time is a component of speed. He stays within the scholastic tradition where time is a mathematical quantity that measures a process's duration using a clock, the sun, or another type of device.
Aristotle viewed time as a measure of change, defining it as the number of change with respect to the before and after. He believed that time is dependent on the mind's ability to count instants, indicating that without beings capable of counting, time would not exist.
Time would have to pass while counting time as well, so this poses a problem. That is why it makes sense to have a master universal time.
I would argue that universal time, independent of an observer's perspective, does not exist. Instead, I propose that time is relative and depends on the observer's frame of reference. This has been proven with a high degree of accuracy to date.
There are other things to be aware of and relate. Time and set theory, remember George Cantor? He finds that there are different sizes of infinity. That's what's important, the difference between natural numbers and real numbers, having the ability to count one while not the other, and postulating that you can do all of the above. The continuum hypothesis, the CH hypothesis. Can every natural and real number be counted? That is the question, the Cantor continuum problem. As of now, it's still open.
George Cantor would likely view the continuum as a fundamental aspect of his work on set theory, believing that the continuum hypothesis, which posits that there is no set whose size is strictly between that of the integers and the real numbers, is true. This is back from 1878.
There are other aspects of this we can discuss. One thing I wanted to mention was Marcel Proust and his book, In Search of Lost Time. It may be one of the longest books. I heard that the audiobook was 130-something hours. It took the reader like a year to read it, I guess. I can do it in under a year, I'm sure of it. But that really is quite a task indeed. But supposedly it's been done. But the idea is that something as beautiful and important as the feeling of love that we feel as apes, humans, this idea cannot be quantified in a finite duration.
Many people may view time as a crucial element in understanding the lives and achievements of historical figures, exploring how their experiences and decisions shape their legacies.
It is important to regard our history for sure.
We can emphasize the importance of context and timing in innovation and leadership when considering the vastly complex idea of time.
A finite duration of time is insufficient to describe the monumental feeling we get when we experience life and love. Ergo, the decision and the sensation of feeling love is forever non-quantifiable.
Marcel Proust viewed love as a complex and often painful experience, describing it as an incurable malady and emphasizing that it involves a constant cycle of desire and disappointment. He believed that love is deeply intertwined with memory and perception, suggesting that our feelings can be influenced by the fleeting nature of time and our own emotional states.
It is something that only experience can attempt to relate to. I believe we're all aware of this, and if this is something you have never felt, maybe one day you will. Hopefully, one day you will. The hopes and dreams and the meaning and the point of living and life is what I'm referring to.
Believe it or not, I know a thing or two about love, even though history knows very little of my love life. England was just not the environment for what we are speaking about here.
There wasn't much more I needed to add with this one. Are we talking about the poetic naturalism?
I'm not so certain that there is only one reality. There may be a multiverse out there that we can never reach.
Or are we alluding to the fact that we are bringing this subject to a close? We are finishing this subject.
Moving forward!
Nothing flat land. Nothing flat land.
Pretty good job on these last few. I know it was hard.
For the time being, I think this is probably good for episode 39, Time's Arrow, part 2. I'm getting a lot of stuff done here. You will be hearing more from me shortly. This is what I got. Thanks, guys.
No problem.
Very well.
Nice job.
I got it from here.
See ya.
All right.
Later, alligator.
See ya, guys.
Bye-bye.
Yep, bye.
The Zeroth Wave Disclaimer.
The views and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the author or authors and do not necessarily reflect the particular views, thoughts, or opinions of Zeroth Wave Productions, any of its sister companies, its parent company, Zeroth Enterprises, or any other entity which had existed, will exist, or which, quote-unquote, presently must exist outside the realm of our current space-time.
Quantum Foam is produced by Zeroth Wave Productions.